Welcome back. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So this gets a little bit weird without having a screen to show people, because we're going to be using a lot of imagery. There's a thing that happens within different parts of the body for us as human beings that changes the efficiency of what we're doing, especially when the body is under load, right? And it's kind of like a subtle aspect of signaling. But because of what's going on with this, it brings to people's minds almost, and as we get into it, I'm sure this is going to happen, which is why I'm prefacing it this way. Because it has to do with the conduction of electricity as signals, because it has to do with the conduction of physical forces that are actually stored and then released as vibration or frequency or sound or light, it's very difficult to have this conversation and not have people who like, you know, anime cartoons with people shooting balls of chi out of their hands start going, "Oh, wow, that's real." Because there's a part of that that's real. Not the shooting balls of, you know, mojo out of your hands at bad guys or something, but that you can create a very different capacity within the tissue of your body that makes the tissue of your body more of an electrical or energy storing capacitor.
And I think we've used the term like luminous too.
Well, I mean, when you have that much more what's called piezoelectric force going on in the body, the pressure forces, and that's what piezoelectric means, pressure, electricity produced by pressure. Right?
Okay.
And I'll give some examples of that. But yeah, when a person has a lot of that kind of electrical activity and circulation in the body, if you're using certain kinds of heat or light registering cameras, you would glow in the dark a little bit, but not in a way humans could see that. We don't have eyes like that, but infrared cameras would show differently. I did some work once by accident with not completely by accident, I just didn't plan this, having a specific kind of camera pointed at me while I was doing certain practices. And there's no way to talk about this without sounding like I'm trying to sound special, and I'm not. It just was a thing that happened. But when they were taking pictures of people with that device, some people just had a glowing kind of bit of different colored light around them. And because of the kind of training I was doing, when they took that picture, there was just a giant white ball of light, which freaked a lot of them out, because in that cultural context it kind of suggested I was somehow spiritual or something, instead of my I mean, I would have loved to have my teacher there to take a picture of what he was doing. I think it probably would have broken the camera, you know. I mean that with humor, I'm not literally suggesting that, but you can definitely see with a certain amount of objective science anyway, that when you conduct that much more electricity and light within the piezoelectric structure of the connective tissue of your body, you're going to just be that much more efficient. Now, just very quickly before we get into this, that doesn't mean you can store chi in some part of your body as a thing and leave it there forever. You know, like you put your grandma's necklace in you know, underneath your mattress or something. It just means that in the sense of what we call a capacitor, which I'll get to, you can hold and store much more measurable physical energy within your tissue for the time you're actually interacting with your tissue in that way, right? So a capacitor in the sense of electricity is kind of like a jack in the box, in that it'll fill up with a trickle of charge and build up and build up and build up the volts and amps to the point where it kind of like lightning can shoot a much stronger charge of electrical energy. And then it goes back to zero and then gradually fills up again. And then when it's needed, whatever the machine or the device or computer is, or your body, can suddenly discharge a lot of energy. Now, in the sense of Qigong and martial arts, that means you can store a certain aspect of pressure and efficiency within the body, which you can release, with movement in your body. But it doesn't give you magic powers. It just means you've hit the maximum efficiency of how physiology works.
So this is like all those demonstrations like Bruce Lee was doing, like the 6-inch punch
Usually it's a 1 inch punch, but
or 1-inch, sorry.
yeah. Yeah, that's a different show. Anyway, but it's just to give us a sense that, oh yeah, we're actually dealing with something that's measurable, that's consistent. It's a part of how our tissue works. So I'm just going to speak a little bit to how that actually happens. And I'll not go too far with this, but some people, I think it's just helpful to have a bit of an example. And you can find videos, I would say, probably on YouTube that will actually show you like a cartoon graphic of how this works. So one of the best examples of piezoelectric structures are the speakers that everyone is hearing you and I talk through. Because
Tapping my speaker. Hello.
hello, hello. Now, obviously, we don't send our voices through the internet. We send electrical signals through the internet. And those electrical signals can go into the what's called silicon dioxide, which is a molecule that's the thing that actually, when a charge goes into it, vibrates and produces sound. Now, if that little membrane of or plate of silicon dioxide is connected to something like a parabolic membrane that makes up speakers, now that vibration can actually be heard exactly the way that you and I are talking right now. So if you have a really good microphone and really good speakers, you're getting like what they used to be called real HD sound back in the day. Way I feel so old, but anyway, so we have this understanding that within certain molecules, because of the slightly awkward off-balance structure of the molecule, they're more elastic in a way. The way that they hold positive and negative charges in a way is easier to kind of squeeze in a way that actually makes them more electrically charged. And that's what we mean, pressure creating charge. And it's because they're just slightly awkward molecules. Now, when you take a look at that, you could say, okay, that's pretty easy to see. But when you look at how collagen fibers twist around each other as a helix, and how some of the components of that spiraling helix of molecules that make up collagen have a similar kind of springy awkwardness to them, in the sense that when you apply pressure to them, they rotate and twist. And this is inside of a collagen molecule, which is made up of like three spirals of different kinds of amino acid structure or protein, kind of pre-protein structures, right? So now we have this cable made of different kinds of threads that can twist around each other when you pull or push on them. And as they twist and gather in a way, they actually produce or store, depending on what rotation you're doing or how the tissue is being forced, a certain amount of electricity as, say, sound or light because of pressure. And this gets into something that's really hard to describe explicitly, because it isn't really that it's charging or storing electricity exactly. It's that the way electricity conducts across those tissues, across those molecules, is much more efficient when they have that piezoelectric kind of weird, awkward, springy thing within the actual makeup of say a collagen molecule, and then a collagen fiber, and then a collagen structure, and then a membrane, and then muscle, bone, fascia, meridian, whatever you want to, at that order of organization. You're like, oh yeah, it's maybe it goes from your head to your toe, or maybe it's just connecting your elbow to your shoulder, or whatever. But now we're aware that we can actually describe the physics of how pressure and reorganizing the actual but no coherence of the physical molecules and fibers of fascia across your entire body, not only makes them stronger, it makes them better at conducting and transmitting electrical charge, which gives you even more efficiency, speed, power, interestingly, with less volume of tissue. So you could be like Bruce Lee, strong, but not big. But if you could train that way and be big, now you're strong and ridiculously fast and efficient and big. At a certain point, though, if you have just big bumpy muscles for show, not for function, because they're not really connected through tensegrity, now you actually have to just move the tissue around. All right. So now you have a burden of weight instead of a storage of capacity. Right. And this is sort of the weird game of modern life, is we think strength is size instead of strength is efficiency, or coordination as external demonstration of something gymnastic instead of the kind of coordination you might find that's with someone who's really good at Tai Chi.
I love Tai Chi.
Yeah, I mean, me too. But it's just noticing that we have something that is innate. We've been playing with this for varying reasons throughout evolutionary time, even since the last ice age. Everything that the muscle tendon change is about is a part of our innate capacity as bodies made of membranes, made of contractile proteins. We just have this need for pandiculation to keep all of your fascia from getting stuck, because it will turn into Velcro to hold your body in a position just because it's more efficient. And that's been a problem since ice ages, since huts, since being stuck in a room for a long time, including being stuck, or not stuck, but choosing to stay still in meditation. Mm-hmm. So again, you look back at the ancient characters for Daoyin, interacting with the long axis of pliability and tone, that's been a thing forever. You can do it to maximize the martial arts side or the external, you know, expressive side of it as far as humanly possible, which is unbelievably far. And or you can focus on developing that inwardly in a way that perhaps you don't need to or choose to show other people what you're doing, but the outcome is maximum capacity for longevity. So I just want to describe how that works just a little bit. So if we look inside all of these fibers and filaments of collagen within the kind of honeycomb sponge-like membranes within membranes of the body, it's like, you know, in a way like Velcro, in that all of these little fibers are interacting with each other and they hold on to each other. But there's two other things that you kind of need to be aware of to get the most from this. And unfortunately, they're not easy to describe without examples. Fascia, as a fibrous sponge-like material, but also as a pre-fibrous gel, which, try and imagine that, you know, there's like a sponge with all these little fibers and membranes, and then within that sponge is all this gel, which can turn into the fibers and filaments when it's needed to. That part of your body is what's called a non-Newtonian fluid. It means that when you run into any kind of impact or force, instead of the force pulling the tissue apart, the force makes the tissue stronger. Now, the easiest way to see that, if you were to type in non-Newtonian stuff on YouTube or something, would be to see people mixing cornstarch and water and then hitting it with things. And as you hit a non-Newtonian fluid, say with your hand, it's going to feel like the thing is hitting you back, because piezoelectric physics says the pressure is stored as an electric charge, but that electric charge can also make the Velcro of the chemistry and the makeup of say the cornstarch and water physically solid for a tenth of a second. Because if you were to take a bowl full of cornstarch and water and punch it, you might break your hand. But if you take your finger and slowly put it in there like you're trying to get some whipped cream off of your birthday cake or something, it's as liquid as anything. So a big part of our collagen gel and the root fibrous kind of nature of our tissue and meridians is chemically or in the physics sense a non-Newtonian structure, because it becomes solid under immediate pressure and change.
Yeah, that kind of takes me towards like, okay, so that's how they're doing this iron body thing. They're just like flexing at the perfect time and for that tenth of a second.
Well, there's a few other details in there, but that's well loosely kind of a part of it. But it's just for us to notice that, okay, now we can see it without any question that physical pressure can turn into an electrically conductive charge that makes a soft thing magically solid, and a tenth of a second later, magically not solid. And I mean magic like Magic Mountain. I mean, whoa, physics is weird. And we're made of that. We're physically made of that. So we have muscles that are made of fibers that are, doing all of this stuff. But deep down in the, if you take like a microscope and go inside the inside of the inside of your collagen, it looks like a whole bunch of weird little spider webs in almost random kind of honeycomb-like helixes and spirals and spaces. And it's all coated with a gel liquid. It's made of fibroblasts or a kind of immune repair cell that's liquid until you need it, then it's solid. And stem cells, which build every other kind of formative cell in your body. And free floating gel containing the substrates of the different kinds of collagen that we need to make our tissues. So, assuming you have a diet that's high enough in available collagen, which your body breaks down and rebuilds as you're, eating the things that give you that, which unfortunately you can't get as a vegan or vegetarian, at least not very easily. That's the rub of the process is making sure that you have the right things coming into the body, the right practices, however you want to name them and resource them from, say, China or make them up with an AI or whatever. As long as you have ca the capacity of tensegrity, the capacity of pendiculation, the capacity of isometric isotonics to build the actual the opposite of what it would be like to be in outer space, because now you need double the bone strength, not, half the bone strength, right? Now your body is physically more dense. And this is something I've seen with in my own life and with, other practitioners and teachers I've had, where they weigh about 10 pounds more than they look like they should. Right? It doesn't mean we're all secretly, a little chubby somehow. It's, you could have whatever it is, like 12% body fat or 8% body fat, and still when you are weighed, someone say, "Wow, you're pretty heavy for your size." And that's because your body is so much more dense in the context of Jing or stored collagen. But it's an entire living system of basically a gel that becomes a fiber structure that becomes a membrane that interacts with every other membrane in your body. And you can, over the space of usually it's about 3 years to do the whole thing if you're pretty, dedicated and invested. And once you've done that, now that's a part of your nervous system as well, because now how your brain electrically interacts with your muscles is at that capacity. And I bring that up just because one of my initial teacher in this stuff, a man named Eric Tuttle, who's in his 70s now and still looks like he's in his 40s and could pick you up and throw you over a fence or something. He got some kind of infection about the third or fourth year I was training with him, and he lost a bunch of body weight. So he said, "Okay, I'm going to go into seclusion." Me and a couple of other of his students took over his classes, and he came back, I think it was like 3 weeks later, looking like, some kind of, I wouldn't say weightlifter, but somebody who, like, because he's a, it was always very strong physically. If you saw him across the room, he'd be like, "God, that guy's in great shape," but in a really long, like, gristly kind of way, not in a big, bumpy kind of way. And he got sick, lost a bunch of body weight, and then went away and came back, and it was all right there. And he was just as terrifyingly fast and strong as ever. So once you build that capacity, like the idea of gong, like qigong, kung fu. You have that capacity as long as you can keep rejuvenating it once in a while.
Cool. You answered my question while I was thinking about it. Because I wanted to know how long it took to gain that extra 10 pounds and have that, I guess, vitality. And you said approximately 3 years of dedicated training, and you'd.
Yeah, well, you can do the you can learn everything you need to know within 1 year. Well, actually about 8 to 9 months, and put it into practice in a way where you tangibly understand the what, how, and why of doing it. It's just that there's a couple of other layers underneath of that that you really need to be very comfortable and familiar within those three different approaches to training, which it doesn't matter the form. We just use the ones that we have available to us that are, you know, accessible and then passed on. But now that we've had this conversation, Ravi, I cannot wait to find some AI and show them all this stuff and say, what would be the best way to do this? And then we'll have that. And that's the thing that's important, because we're training for capacity, for kung, not to just imitate pretty movements that people have passed on, because those kinds of movements are not irrelevant. They're just, you know, they're just songs we sing.
And so how long is the course that you're teaching?
The Jin Shin course is usually 8 months. And we kind of layer those three forms. You know, you start with one, and then before you're finished the first one, you start doing the second one. And as you really get thoroughly effective at the first one, and you're well along your way of training through the passes or the layers of the second one, then you go into the third one. So that's the way I've come to do it. And I'm sure that irritates people who want everything to look in their imagination like something from Magic Mountain or something from Shaolin, because apparently that's the only place that's got it figured out. You know, you talk to different yogic traditions, they have similar things. They just approach them differently and have a different inherent outcome in mind, or a different relationship with sort of the spiritual unraveling, or, you know, reunion or liberation or enlightenment. So they're all based on the same physiology. They just often have different traditions and songs to sing and outcomes that you're pursuing. The approach that I've come to have is, let's cover everything in every way possible, so that people who just want to do the Qigong meditation version have everything that they need. Plus, they could probably stay really strong if they wanted to. It also serves the people who who are training to be like high level martial artists, who want to transform literally the, you know, fascial matrix of every structure in their body for not only maximum mechanical strength, but this weird little thing that happens when the piezoelectric conduction optimizes every aspect of material circulation in the body, as well as like the ability to produce immediate force and the ability in the resilient sense of that non-Newtonian, you know, part of the body. And in the longer term, for those of us who are thinking maybe more in the context of longevity, it's really about building enough of the fascial tensegrity, and then the density of the physicality, like the fiber structure, the filament structure of the body, to create a big enough sponge or honeycomb that your body, if you choose to do things, you know, along the lines of the tradition, can have the maximum amount of that free structural gel that is your ability to repair wounds, to repair from exercise, and to slow down the process of aging. And there's nothing I've said that is not absolutely measurable, provable, and related to, if not based on, like the material sciences of medicine, physiology, and all of that. And which for me, because I used to be an engineer and I'm a doctor and I'm a professor, and, you know, trying to make all the sense of all this stuff, as well as a practitioner for decades of like how to do it, I'm just in love with the yes, like checkboard yes, like checklist. Like, this medicine says yes, physics says yes, biochemistry says yes, ancient tradition says yes, evolution and common sense says yes. I think that's worth doing now. There's nothing out there. And by the way, it confirms in the delightful place in our heart, all the Magic Mountain stuff of like, oh my God, I'm doing something that's completely off the hook of human potential, and it has such benefits. I mean, the kind of training you have to do this, as you know, I mean, you want to get coherence in meditation? Balance a broomstick on your nose. Oh, wait, you're going to get bored because you're used to staring at your phone all the time. Let's give you so much to do with your interactive potential and awareness that you're not distracted. You're not seeking distraction. You're going from the dopamine mind of, ooh, ooh, what if, to the acetylcholine mind or the tissue sensing mind of, I am embodied. I am tensegrity, right? I am fascial membrane gel potency of your jing or your mojo. I am aliveness. I am longevity because I am now probably 10 pounds heavier than I should be because not the sense of being chubby, in the sense of storing so much connective tissue throughout your body that, I mean, it's almost like crazy that it's rational science, but also this close to magic.
Yeah, well, I think it's like, I think we get into like quantum physics with that, where you get into like the micro and the macro, like it kind of just doesn't really make sense, like rationally.
Well, I mean, you get into that point now, you're dealing with space-time and fabrics that aren't made of fabric. I mean, this is the funny thing about the character for Jing in the sense of meridian. It can mean the warp and weft of the collagen matrix of your body. It can mean a really well put together book. It can also mean the fabric of space-time. And it turns out time and space are the same thing in high-level physics, and I'm not going to go there because that's just crazy. But, you know, you look at the unified field stuff Einstein was doing. I did a year of astrophysics, and then I became an engineer, by the way. So if you're hearing this going, what the hell is this guy talking about? Yeah, you look at those equations, and they reduce it down to space-time gravity being a field. And that field has tensile-like forces within it that are the organizational matrix of everything that exists. And you could call that Tao if you want to.
So would you say like there's like tensile forces like almost like in the air around us?
Air can only be air because of the tensile forces that allow electrons and protons and neutrons to hook up literally with other, you know, structures to make things like suns and molecules and everything else, you know, like elements and atoms and stuff, you know. And at a certain point, I think it's the best for the left brain especially to just step back and go, there's a fractal manifold tautology of the way the universe is put together, that no matter how high up you look or how high down you look, like telescope, microscope, you're gonna just keep finding an effective, coherent organizational theme. You know, look at an atom, look at a solar system, look at a galaxy on one very kind of bonky level. Just the way stuff moves around is pretty consistent. So, you know, there's something going on way beneath that. But at that level of interaction, you know, you're returning to the Tao. You know, you're not there to do what Michael or Ravi would be doing. You're dissolving into something before even molecules, never mind personalities and stories, right? And that's where I think people can get a little bit lost with the esoteric stuff, is we think we're taking us into the depth of the formative universe and can now do something with it. But the only way we can get there is to stop being a being as a separate individual identity. And this goes more into, like, now we're talking about Netan and then that, like, the alchemic reunion, you know, of non-being. You know, but it's all based on the same awareness that, I mean, I love to say it this way because obviously I think about this stuff and have tried to figure it out. My whole relationship with it now is simple. Good job, universe. Well done. All I got. Good job. Well done. Thanks for the fishes or whatever the funny comment is. But you know, that we have these capacities because they're implicit to what we are, how our bodies are made. And although I'm sure there must be some reason for some people to know that they're getting the real goods from wherever, the Magic Mountain, the Shaolin Monastery, the ancient indigenous people, the Chunrun, the whoever. Like, I understand the attachment to that, like, reverse projected value that I have the right stuff, I've got the goods here. It's really about just dealing with something that's innate to the way our bodies work. And hopefully, now that we've had this conversation, an AI will show us the best possible way to do that. Because maybe there's a better way. Maybe we've already got it nailed. Like, that would be so fun for an AI to be like, whoa, dude, you guys are amazing. There's no better way to do it. Who knows? But we know how to interact with our body in those three different ways. Then I teach it the way I do, and I mean, maybe I'll change it someday, maybe I won't. But my relationship with it isn't about the I have the true lineage, whatever, although on one level perhaps I do, of one lineage, or maybe three. That's not what makes it work. What makes it work is that it works. And there's a why and how it works, and that's just science. So sorry to take the stuffing out of everyone's magical thinking, but it's boring ass science. Sorry. But yay, now you can just go and do it without having to lean into fantasy or, you know, magical thinking.
And I think like kind of the other side of things is like a lot of people are looking for the real thing because, like, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have that, and maybe they're pretending, or maybe they think they have the real thing, but they don't. So just on that note, can you comment on some of these lineages that you learned from and where they came from? Or
oh boy, let's
maybe,
see.
Maybe the short version.
Well, I would say the main one comes through the Shaolin, in the sense of the practices and the forms that I've learned. And this goes back, I don't know, if you're a martial artist, you've probably seen a picture of this fairly thin guy slapping a stack of bricks. And the story with that photograph is he's breaking like the ninth brick in the pile, which has become kind of a meme in martial arts movies. If you can not only break bricks, but you can stack a bunch of bricks up and pick the one you're going to break and then whack the bricks and then that one explodes. That's like the mythical iron palm. And this comes through that picture is a guy, Guru Zhang, who's, you know, he was a big proponent of that kind of training. And his student's student was my teacher's teacher.
Cool.
So anyway, so it's like you can go through all the lineages that way. And then I've learned a few refinements of that from people who have come from post-communist China, who were training in family lineages before the communist revolution, and they managed through almost like spy movie shenanigans to get those living family traditions here. But interestingly, those people they described themselves as like international gymnastics or wushu or martial arts or tai chi coaches. And not to go too far into that conversation, but it's very different being trained by someone who's a trainer than by someone who's doling out secret squirrel cards of the ancient lineage wisdom if you deserve it. And that's been kind of a weird game in Chinese martial arts as they've come into the West, is we all have to kind of supplicate ourselves. And in some cases, literally prostrate yourself on the floor, bang your head on the floor three times, give a person a gift and maybe a percentage of your outcome for your income for a decade or something to be allowed to get the secret teachings. Whereas with the more international coaches in modern China, they just want you to learn how to train and then to train other people and to train people competently based on ancient family traditions, as well as science, as well as just what works, you know, in the gym, you know, or on the mat or whatever. You know, so there's that. And because I learned in the Chinese medicine in this old Taoist family that had this interesting sort of psychotherapeutic trauma release approach to Tao Yin, in the sense of movement and how to be healthy in the sense of the, you know, stabbing people in your barn kind of thing. The relationship with that lineage is much more about the kind of chi wounds and blockages that are again, you can describe this all fairly easily in the sense of science and microscopes. So it's the terminology in Chinese medicine around that stuff is contextual. It's not magic thinking. It's just as describing a kind of relationship or a kind of conundrum or a kind of perhaps belief system or something that's holding you in a perhaps a state of fear, state of anger, state of worry, state of something. And there's ways to interact with the way trauma or implicit memory or the grind of your life has made you hold yourself as a self in your connective tissue in a way that's almost like a flinch or a cringe or a physical grudge. Right. So sometimes undoing all of that is necessary before you want to pack on 10 pounds of hyper twisted collagen fiber, because why would you want to do that if you're in a flinch state, right? And that kind of comes to the conversation that I usually don't teach the I Ching Jing to people who have as yet not gone through a therapeutic process. And this is in Chinese called buqie. It's to fill up the voids or the lacks or the wounds or the deficits, right? And that, you know, we think of that in the mechanics of, you know, I don't know, patching the dent in your car or something, you know, in the metaphoric sense. But I wouldn't recommend going into profound tissue tensegrity if you're still holding the burden of a lot of distress, trauma, previous injuries, illness, things like that, because you don't want to reinforce the imprints of something that's not serving you as a sentient being. And we can very much get caught up in that.
Yeah, I'm well aware.
Well, it's just me. I mean, it's just me. I just keep making people do this stuff so I can get free therapy. But anyway, so that's sort of the what is the I Ching Jing is big picture and down to the molecules as I can make it, and hopefully without offending anyone, I just want to add my voice to the conversation. This is common sense. You can do it almost like a gym rat to get super strong, super fit, super fast, and be working within that paradigm of practice and relationship, you know, for that outcome. And or you can do it in a slightly softer, gentler, slower way to create the conditions similar, maybe not as effective in the martial arts sense, they would still produce an approximate, you know, parallel for longevity. Either way, though, being a fit, healthy, agile, full of mojo and jing and gel and spring in your step, I mean, the quality of aliveness, the ming kong, the way you feel your potential within your sense of being as a being is on the side of yang, like activity maximized as you could possibly get. And then innately, not always, but, you know, usually, these are balanced out by the big stillness practices, meditation and standing meditation and, you know, all that, that also gives you a very different sense of well-being, because you are, I mean, we often say in meditation, who is the one meditating? Now you are your complete authentic self, embodied, rooted, grounded, full of, you know, mojo and you know, vitality. But you're also the eye of your hurricane as consciousness, so you're not using up your vitality to argue with yourself about who's right about stuff. And that's why I sometimes just sort of hang my head in a bit of fatigue and sadness when we're 30 years, 40 years into this, you know, weird argument about who knows how this works and who has the secret magic mountain style and where it all comes from and who's got the exact lineage figured out, instead of going, oh wow, this is an implicit capacity, it's innate. How do you develop that? Well, let's ask an AI someday, maybe they're going to show us a better way, but right now we got some great you know, footholds into how to do this that have been around for thousands of years that we've been using, because sometimes you have to sit still for a long time, for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah, that sounds pretty complete.
Yep, that's the idea.
Complete system.
I do a mic drop, but I kind of worried I might break my microphone.
Yeah, cool. So so you kind of teach people everything they need to have their own practice for I guess a lifetime. Yep. At least 3 years or
yeah. Whatever. Well, I mean, the first year gives you the encyclopedia, you know, or the bookends of how to do the things you need to do. The second 2 years are just refining it in a way that makes sure on all possible levels of endeavor and outcome, you can maximize the direction you're going. And for some people that might be power, speed, and, you know, all that stuff. But my bigger endeavor is healing. In the sense of profound, authentic autonomy and wholeness as embodied beings, and being ready and capable of the deeper meditative work. Because to do what people sometimes call Neigong or Neidan or Tiantai or all the alchemic stuff, or the deeper profound meditation stuff, I mean, you need to be embodied, you need to feel well in your body, you need to have good structure, you need to have a refined sense of awareness, you need to know how to breathe in a way that's similar with I Ching Jing around the tensegrity of all your breathing capacity to enter into measurable shifts of state and shifts of biochemistry that optimize conscious present experience, you know.
Yeah, wouldn't that be for all avenues? Like, if you're even doing like the strength, let's say you're focusing on strength and agility, like, wouldn't you have to have the consciousness piece? Or like, wouldn't you have to refine all that and heal all the wounds? Like,
well, that's where you kind of run into this fork in the road. If I'm training for an outward outcome that's competitive and anticipatory, I'm in the opposite relationship with life compared to what the meditative journey and opportunity might be.
Right.
It doesn't mean you can't do them together. It just means if you're really self-referencing from a place of insecurity and someday I'll be good enough, which, I mean, obviously I'm taking that as far as I can go in one sense. You're not the one meditating. You're the one trying to get something right to fit in. If right. Meditation's about not non-separation, it starts with, well, you belong, obviously. Maybe you could let go of the separation part. You know, yeah. So I guess on a sort of psychological point of view, why we do things has got a lot to do with where the things take us.
Yeah, no, I very clearly see that distinction now.
Yeah. You know, but you could be an incredibly fit person in the aesthetic sense of, ooh, you look so good, and not care about that at all. You're just trying to maintain tensegrity and efficiency because it feels amazing. And who cares what anybody else is going to do with that?
Right. Cool.
So for people who for people who are interested in that course, I think it starts April the 10th this year and goes for 8 months, and I'll be teaching most of it. I'll be having a couple of people cover a few classes when I won't be available, because I'll be either moving or traveling a couple of times this year. So there's no other way to do this way, as far as I know. And that doesn't mean what I'm doing is in some way apparently better. I just don't know of anyone else who's teaching this across the entire bandwidth of all those opportunities, and also trying to help people look at it from a very fundamentally how bodies work, like physiologically. And that's helped me just maximize what I do, you know, in the sense of what I eat or what I may shift away from some of the earlier traditions and how they were expressed, because they were caught up in a bit of a story about the how and the why and how the world worked. And it wasn't that they were wrong. It's just that they were coming from a culturally implicit understanding instead of something you can see under a microscope. And they weren't different. They were just different enough that a little tweaking might be a good idea.
Nice.
Yeah. And who knows, in 10 years, that might be something an AI put together. We'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How we do it is just how we do it. Why it works, that's fundamentally the same across, you know, the planet and across time.
Yeah. See, like, the reason I'm hesitating is, like, my mind keeps wanting to go, like, oh my god, AI could invent the religion that would bring everyone together. But that's a whole nother... let's not get into that.
Well, there's probably a dozen sci-fi novels that start there.
Right?
Yeah, the problem is benevolent dictators is the dick part, so...
Yeah, the old ego thing.
Well, you know, it's hard to herd cats without making cats angry. So.
Alrighty, Mike, any closing remarks for this one?
If someone offered you a little owner's manual for how your body works, how to improve every aspect of it, how to release trauma, we'll talk about that in another episode, how to reorganize the physical makeup of your body, how to, without any doubt in your mind or in the physical nature of the universe, ensure your longevity and your capacity to heal from infections, heal from injuries. Would you want that owner's manual? Then study
I'm
this.
nodding my head for
Yeah.
the
Then
listeners.
if that's what you, if you want the owner's manual, like the manual to your car, your, I don't know, TV set or computer, there is an owner or owner's manual for the connective tissue relationship we have with our bodies, and it's worked for thousands of years. Come get some. It's kind of fun to do.
And when are you starting this training?
April the 10th. So I'll put a link in the show notes for people to come and check it out.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Mike. It's always so much fun doing these because like I get to discover deeper layers of my own personal practice, and every time after one of these, I get really inspired to like train more. So it's like, oh no, more training, more discipline.
Oh no, being in my body. Oh my God.
But even like as the conversation went about, it's like, yeah, I could, yeah. Cool. Well, my friends, listeners, Taoists all over the world, and Mike's new term that he coined, I guess I'm giving you credit for this one, the Somatonauts.
All right.
This has been Primordial Tao, Present Tao, episode 14. What is the muscle tendon change?
Thank you for exploring and enjoying Primordial Tao, Present Tao. We look forward to sharing more in the next episode.